Good evening, friends. The news today tells that 7 oil companies in the Pacific states are being sued by the government on antitrust charges. It's to be hoped that the trial of these companies will be held in the courts of law and not in the advertising columns of the newspapers. This week, A&P renewed its full-page advertisements in daily and weekly newspapers, protesting against the suit of the Department of Justice against that organization on charges of monopolistic practices. Now, this observer doesn't pretend to know whether A&P is guilty of these charges or not. He has read the A&P case not only in the newspaper advertisements, but also in the news stories and editorials which have gone along with the ads. But he hasn't happened to see the government side, and perhaps you who are listening haven't seen it either. Furthermore, even if you and I had both sides of the case before us, we would probably not be capable of judging the fine points of the law. That's the business of the courts, after both sides have been heard. 52 guns boomed out today from the famous old Tower of London, just to remind Britishers it was 13 years ago today that King George was crowned. What a lot of water has gone under the bridge since Edward VIII became Duke of Windsor and the Duke of York became George VI. An anti-war campaign has been started by 600 churchmen meeting in Detroit. We appeal, they say, to individual Christians to refuse to make or use weapons of destruction. Well, now if 600 communists could get together and start the same kind of a movement, we'd be getting somewhere. The Associated Press says the Navy has fired a rocket up into the stratosphere from right over the equator. Says the AP, referring to the rocket, she reached 106 and 4/10 miles into the sky. Very interesting, but why is the rocket called she? In another item, the AP refers to a submarine, supposedly sighted by a tanker off the Jersey coast, as it. An expert at Michigan State College has come up with the information that the number of horses and mules on American farms has dropped from 14.5 to 7.5 million in the last 10 years. Now, he figures that by cutting in half the number of horses and mules, we have gained 24 million acres of land. It used to take that much land to feed those 7 million beasts which have disappeared from the scene. You think maybe that explains the overproduction of farm products we hear so much about? Well, it might, except that we have 20 million more people to take the place of those 7 million horses and mules. And it takes more land to feed a person than it does a horse. Folks are more choosy about what they eat. Actually, only about 10 million people can be fed from the 24 million acres of land that those horses and mules aren't using anymore. This farm problem certainly does get complicated, doesn't it? In a speech today at Butte, Montana, President Truman referred to communism, socialism, and all other isms. Which brings up the question of just what an ism is. Is there such a thing as an ism without a prefix? Is ism a word or isn't it? A nice question, one with which the dictionary makers will have to wrestle if people like the President of the United States continue to use it as a word. Here's a tentative definition of an ism. An ism is some kind of an ideology you don't believe in but are too lazy to describe. Good night.
Hiya, sports fans. This is Ed Grennan, transcribing my portion of the March of Sports tonight. I'm going to Chicago for Mother's Day, and Alan Cook will be bringing you the up-to-the-minute sports news and scores. It's difficult to generate sympathy for Dick Wakefield and his troubles with the New York Yankees. The big outfielder has brought his woes upon himself. Wakefield has taken a lot out of baseball, and he has given very little to the game. The Detroit Tigers gave Wakefield a bonus of $52,000 in a bright new automobile when he signed his first contract with them back in 1941. Wakefield then was just a kid fresh off the University of Michigan campus. Dick looked as though he was worth that fat bonus when he came up to the Tigers from Beaumont in 1943 and batted .316. Then in 1944, he hit .345 in 78 games before going into the Navy for wartime service. But in 1943 and 1944, they were war years, and the quality of Major League Baseball was low. Wakefield came back to the Tigers in 1946, and since he's been playing with the game's real pros, Dick has been a disappointment. Last year, he hit a feeble .206 while appearing in 59 games, mostly as a pinch hitter. Wakefield proved himself to be a problem child, and he failed to hustle. Wakefield possesses great natural talent for baseball, but he has stubbornly refused to strive to get the maximum mileage out of his natural attributes. Despite his post-war failure, the Tigers always paid Wakefield well. He drew $22,500 from the Tigers last season for riding the bench most of the year. Then the Tigers gave up on Wakefield and traded him to the Yankees. The Yankees gave him a $17,500 contract. And more, the Yankees gave him a chance to rehabilitate himself as a baseball player. The Yankees wanted a strong, power-hitting outfielder desperately. Wakefield was given a chance to prove he could fill the bill, but again, he failed to tackle the chance with energy. The disappointed Yankees tried to deal him to the Chicago White Sox, and although Wakefield failed to demonstrate that he's even a $5,000-a-year ball player, he refused to report to Chicago unless given a $22,500 paycheck. So the deal did not go through. The Yankees have suspended Wakefield. It's possible that the Yankees will deal him to some other club if any be willing to take a chance with Wakefield. Failing that, the Yankees may put him on the ineligible list. That apparently would mean the end of Dick Wakefield as a baseball player. But even though Wakefield's history does not admit sympathy for him in his present troubles, the case again raises the point of the justice of organized professional sports reserve clause. Under it, the Yankees can sell or trade a man to another club, and he must accept the transfer without protest or be banished from his sport. Wakefield was an employee of the Detroit Tigers last year. The Tigers traded him to the Yankees. He accepted that trade and signed a contract to work for $5,000 a year less than he'd received in 1949. The Yankees traded him to Chicago. But Wakefield decided he would not work for the White Sox unless he received more money than he'd agreed to take from the Yankees. Americans have the right under our Constitution to fix their own price for their labor. Employers have the right to reject that price. But the worker has a right to shop around and try and make a deal with an employer who will meet his price. A bank employee, told he's to be transferred, can quit and seek work in another bank. But a professional athlete often has no choice. He belongs body and soul to his club. He can be sent from city to city without his consent. His pay can be cut. He can be denied a deserved salary raise. He can protest, but he cannot quit. He cannot shop around for work with a club that would suit him better. If the player fails to accept the dictates of his employer, he can be laid off without pay and can be kept from obtaining another job in his field. There are many who believe that the reserve clause is both un-American and illegal. Several challenges have been hurled at baseball's reserve clause in the courts in recent years, but organized baseball has managed to settle its disputes before the matter could come up for decision by the courts. No one will question the right of the Yankees to rid themselves of Dick Wakefield if he does not measure up to their requirements. But it might not be a bad idea if someday the courts were allowed to decide whether it's legal for the Yankees or any other sports enterprise to prevent a man from playing instead of firing him so that he can try to sell his services elsewhere. Young Pat O'Sullivan of Orange, Connecticut is receiving high praise for her splendid victory in the recent North and South Women's Championship Golf Tournament at Pinehurst, North Carolina. But a special word of praise is due the runner-up, Mrs. Estelle Lawson Page, before the 1950 North and South play is completely forgotten. Mrs. Page was seeking her eighth victory in the tournament, and she gave it a real try before bowing to the youngster from Connecticut. Mrs. Page turned up at the first tee for the championship match, haggard from a sleepless night and suffering from stomach pains. But despite her distress, Mrs. Page did not whimper, and she played beautiful golf, even though defeated 3-2 by Miss O'Sullivan. Miss Page admitted later that she was hardly able to stand in the final few holes and that she experienced severe pain in her right side. However, she motored back to her Chapel Hill, North Carolina home during the afternoon. Then, shortly after 9 p.m. that night, Mrs. Page checked into a hospital. The diagnosis was acute appendicitis, and at 10:30 p.m., plucky Mrs. Page went under a surgeon's knife. The courage and sportsmanship displayed by Mrs. Page in playing out the final round and permitting Miss O'Sullivan to gain an untarnished victory showed once again the stuff of which sports champions are made. And that just about winds up my transcribed part. Now, Alan Cook, suppose you come in and give us the wind-up on the up-to-the-minute sports news.
Dick, we'll do it. Want to do it straight down if you're ready? Okay. Nervous type of business, and once you get used to it, it'll go down.
We're happy to have up in our WKZO studios a couple of members of the athletic department, shall we say, of Parchment Junior High School. Two of the athletes have showed up this afternoon. They are Rush McDaniel and Mickey Kaser. We'll start out with you, Rush. Rush, how old are you?
16.
16, huh? What grade you in there over there at Parchment?
9th.
At 9th? I see. You're going on to Kalamazoo Central, I take it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What do you plan on taking up over there at Case Central when you get there?
Well, you mean in sports?
As far as sports are concerned, yeah, right.
Well, football and basketball and baseball or track.
What, your past history at Parchment was what?
as far as sports are concerned?
Football, basketball, baseball.
Ball and track.
Yes.
Here we go again. Yeah, which is your favorite sport while at Parchman?
Football.
Football, huh? You like that better than the rest?
Yes.
How about baseball? Do you think that's any kind of a field for you at all, or you think that's just another sport?
That's just another sport.
You also went out for track, huh? What positions were you going out for in track?
Well, I run the 100 and the 50 and a relay.
It's mostly dash work with you, is that right?
Yes.
You operated out of what kind of a formation in football, Rush?
Short punt.
Short punt formation. You were the right halfback, were you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how about, you got any ideas for college? I realize this is pretty far in advance, but have you any ideas along that line?
Well, I'd like to go to Western. I'd like to be a coach.
You would like to coach, would you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. You're in particular, I imagine it'd be football being your favorite sport.
Yes.
Any ideas along that line as to where you'd like to coach?
Well, I don't know.
You just like to coach, is that right?
Yes.
Well, our other representative from Parchman Junior High School is Mickey Kaiser. Mick, how old are you?
15.
You're 15, huh? And you're in what grade there at Parchman?
9th grade.
You're in the 9th grade. How about the sports that you've taken part in?
Football, basketball, baseball, and track.
Football, there we go. Four sports. Both you guys went out for four sports, is that right?
That's
What's
right.
your favorite sport, Mick?
Basketball.
Basketball. What position do you play?
Forward.
How many points do you average, Mick, in basketball this year? Do you remember?
64.
60, not average. Whoa, boy, easy. I mean, I don't really know the whole season, per game.
Oh, about 6 points or so.
Uh-huh. I was going to say we had a junior George Mike in here for a moment or so. You're going on to Case Central, are you?
Yes.
How about college for you, Mick?
I think I'll go to Western Michigan College.
You're going over to Western, are you?
Yes.
How about, what subjects are you going to take up at Kalamazoo Central? You made up your mind yet?
Oh, I'll take an academic course.
A regular academic course to get you entrance into college, is that right?
That's right.
How about the future? You planning on coaching, too?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, Mick. Well, we've had Rush McDaniel of Parchman Junior High School, a 9th grader. He's going on to Case Central. And Mickey Kaiser, another 9th grader who's 15 years old. Rush is 16. Mickey's 15. He's going on to Case Central. Both the coaches over there at Case Central can look forward to having these boys try out. That's Bob Queering and Alf Pedler can look forward to these two boys from Parchman Junior High School. Thanks much, fellas, for being with us.